on April the 3rd, 2007. I'd like to welcome everybody here today. We're going to be hearing some wave energy bills. We call it Wave Energy Day today. We're going to learn a lot about alternative energy. That's a subject and a topic that's talked about in the halls of this building every day. And it's an exciting thing, and we need to be independent, and Oregonians like that. And so I think our alternative energy sources are taking on new life, and wave energy is certainly one that we want to hear a lot about. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 875. And I'll call Rob Bobet and Commissioner Terry Thompson. Judith, if you'll tell us what the bill is about.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 875 requires the posting of 100% bond for removal and restoration in order to obtain a permit to operate wave energy facilities. It would declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. You have in your possession now two amendments to that measure. The Dash 1 amendments come from the Department of State Lands. That replaces the Water Resources Commission with the Department of State Lands as the state agency receiving the application for an ocean energy facility license and the related bond. And it places that language in the submerged and submersible lands statute rather than the statute governing hydroelectric projects. The Dash 2 amendments you also have at your seat. Those amendments replace the original bill. The Dash 2s authorize the director of the Department of State Lands to promulgate rules for the licensing of wave energy facilities or devices. It requires an owner or operator of such a facility located within Oregon's territorial sea to maintain cost estimates of the amount of financial assurance necessary for both proper closure and post-closure maintenance, as well as any corrective action required at the site. It allows financial assurance requirements to be met by any combination of insurance, trust fund, surety bond, letter of credit, or qualification as a self-insurer, or in fact, if the department adopts an additional method by rule. It allows the Director of State Lands to specify a policy or contractual terms, conditions, or defenses necessary to establish evidence of financial assurance. It would require an owner or operator to provide evidence of that financial assurance at the time that a license is granted to operate such a facility, and requires an update of that information every subsequent January 31st. Requires an owner or operator to provide evidence of financial assurance again before beginning corrective action. And it finally requires that owner or operator to establish provisions that are satisfactory to the director of the Department of State Lands for disposing of any excess monies received or interest earned on that financial assurance. We're still waiting for fiscals and revenues on both the original measure and the amendments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Judith. Welcome. Who's going first?
Well, I'm Terry Thompson. I'm Mickey County Commissioner. And the impetus for the bill was to protect the grounds and to make sure that if we had these devices fail, that the fishing grounds, which produces renewable food resources, would be put back in its original shape. But I will turn this over to Rob Bivette, because he's been working on these Dash 2 amendments and been working on this whole wave action generator facility siting and trying to protect the oceans off of Lincoln County as much as any person in this business. So I think the best thing to do is just turn it over to him.
All right. Welcome, Rob.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rob Bovet is wearing my hat as Assistant County Counsel for Lincoln County, an unusual hat that I don't usually wear in this building. But that's my paying job, actually, which is kind of nice. I thought with the chair's
I wish I had one of them, Madam Chair.
I thought with the chair's permission, I'd give you some brief background on what we're looking at doing here all along the Oregon coast. I know I expressed a lot of excitement. I still am very excited when we talked in Tillamook last. This is a very exciting opportunity for all Oregonians and Oregon in specific. But I thought I'd give you a little background, and I'll just flash through it really quickly, and then I'll talk about the bills you have before you, why we've proposed them. Actually, a 3 out of 4 needs some amendments, as you might suspect, and we're trying to satisfy the industry and make the industry comfortable with what's going on and make Oregon truly an inviting place to develop this technology. So I'll start, actually, with something that happened yesterday. It's a slide that you don't have in your packet because it happened yesterday. And I'll just mention in passing that the U.S. Supreme Court decided 2 landmark cases yesterday. And the reason I mention it here today is, and we won't see the impact of this for years to come, but I believe that these cases add further fuel to the fire for driving folks toward renewable energy resources. So if anything, yesterday's Supreme Court decisions create even further impetus for us to be looking at renewable energy resources in specific wave energy. I thought I would just briefly, because I didn't have much of a chance in Tillamook, to tell you some of the differences, I think the key differences between wave energy and others. You might have read this last week in the front page of the business section of the Oregonian talking about wind power. And wind power is intermittent because, of course, the wind doesn't blow all the time. And so we have to back up wind power, mostly with natural gas-fired plants. And so we're still having to build out for that. The beautiful thing about wave energy is it's baseload. We don't have to build out backup for wave energy. The waves are always, you know, crashing in on the beach. Now, it turns out they have a seasonal variation, of course, but nicely, the seasonal variation falls along with our demand load. So it's a very nice set of power source when we talk about renewable energies. Waves, water power is also more dense than wind energy, so the size of the facilities that generate the power are thereby smaller. The other really nice thing about wave energy in comparison to wind energy is we don't have to transmit it very far. We can generate the power right off our coast, which is where we need the power. We can be on essentially the west side of the Cascades instead of the east side of the Cascades, transmitting power with line loss and other associated issues. So we're very excited about wave energy. I thought I'd just share briefly, real quickly, and I'll go through these amazingly fast. There's basically 4 different types of technology that are being looked at around the world. I'm going to focus mostly on number 1, which is your buoys and point absorbers, because that's largely what we're looking at here on the Oregon coast, but I will mention the others. This is a slide I actually stole from Dr. Annette Von Juwan at Oregon State University, one of the world's premier research scientists in this particular technology. And we have her here. This is the technology by which everything else is measured. This is actually a patent from 1975 by Dr. Salter from Scotland. He essentially invented a mechanism called Salter's Duck that is 90% efficient at extracting wave energy and 90% efficient at converting that wave energy into electricity. It is an impractical thing to build based on cost, at least as of this time, at least the technologists say, but it is the device by which everything else is basically measured. This is what we're primarily looking at, point absorbers here. Of course, Oregon State University, we have to celebrate right off the top because they are on the cutting edge. This is what we call direct drive buoys. This is essentially generating electricity without converting it to hydraulics or anything else. We're essentially having a buoy and a shaft that's tethered to the bottom, just going up and down, generating electricity directly without any fluids, without any hydraulics. Exciting stuff. And that's Dr. Von Juwan looking down and Dr. Wallace as well. The other technologies that are being looked at off the Oregon coast are buoys as well. Ocean Power Technologies, OPT, from New Jersey has a couple of preliminary permits to look at installing power buoys, their particular device. These are hydraulic devices, so they are converting them to hydraulic energy. And you can see basically the relative size of these buoys. These are not little small things. These are pretty substantial buoys that go well beneath the ocean surface as well. Finnevera Renewables, a Canadian and actually I should say Canadian and Irish corporation, has developed the Aqua Buoy, and they're looking at test facilities. Facilities off this Macaw Bay in Washington, as well as here off the Oregon coast. And again, we're talking about hydraulics, and these operate off basically fluid motion. And let's see, that is not working. Okay. Denmark is experimenting with other devices, basically stationed out in the ocean. You can see kind of how these are proposed to be operated. And this is basically a similar proposal from Ocean Motion International in Colorado, and you can see basically the idea here. It's a platform device. Norwegians are working on a similar device as well. And you'll find everyone, it seems like everyone in the world is working on this technology. Minnesota, which is where I just came back from Friday and Saturday, they don't have oceans, of course, so they're having to test their devices in the Gulf of Mexico. They're working on a pump apparatus similar to what you saw before, and the Irish as well. The Scottish are probably, arguably, the most advanced in terms of their research and development for a lot of reasons, both geographically, and they've been spending a lot of time and money developing technologies. This is just one of them. This basically, the Archimedes wave swing sets just below the surface of the ocean and goes up and down, generating electricity. The Finns have also been very active and, in specific, developing technologies to essentially harness what we call bottom waves, so locating devices in the bottom of the ocean that essentially go back and forth, and you can see the idea here. The Australians, I think too many, maybe Australian surfers were hanging out in the kelp beds because they were watching the kelp go back and forth, and they got the idea, hey, can't we develop a device to essentially harness that type of motion in the ocean, and they created the BioWave, and they have a patented mooring system that essentially captures that back and forth lateral movement, and that's what their design kind of looks like. And the Swedish are actually, their pictures, real pictures, they've actually built these things out and they're planning on testing them as well. Similar device except for it's capturing vertical motion instead of lateral motion. The English have interesting systems. They're trying to capture something, a different feature of wave energy, but it's called irritation. People call me irritating, and in this building especially, they find me irritating. But now I don't take offense to it anymore because maybe it just means I'm going like this here. And that's the type of energy the English are trying to capture in the sea wave device, and you get the idea there. And it's basically just creating shelves that are going opposite each other to create energy. Let's see if we can get past this one here. This one, I don't know if it's going anywhere, but I thought it was interesting. I put it in here. I call this the bobblehead device, and I'll just show you real quickly how the theory is behind, you know, capturing the energy here. I haven't heard that this is actually going anywhere, but it's interesting stuff anyways. That's out of Rhode Island. The English and the Australians have partnered to create kind of a combined project called CETO off of Perth, and it's basically using a bellows type of apparatus, and you can see how that's working here. They're hoping to not only generate, and they've actually tested this, they're doing desalination as well as wave energy electricity conversion, so dual-purpose facilities, because if you know your geography, Perth kind of is kind of a little out of the way out back. The Israelis are into the game as well. They've got some kind of interesting devices. You get the idea here. And this is the other one that I just thought I'd mention briefly that I think is important, which is the attenuator devices, which is basically articulating snakes or devices that go up and down. And these are not small devices, by the way, just to give you a size-wise. There's a guy standing there, and you can see him in the yellow coat there, to give the idea. This is basically riding the crest of 3 to 4 waves at a time, and this will give you kind of an idea of the powerful motion that they're capturing here. This is Ocean Power Delivery, OPD, from Scotland. They are very advanced. They have actually sighted this technology off the coast of Portugal and are generating commercial wave energy with this device. It's basically a hydraulic ram situation where they're going up and down, driving rams to drive turbines to generate electricity. In Florida, there's a guy down there by the name of Mr. Berg who has essentially put it into kind of a, instead of a snake, I guess I call this a spider, so he's articulated it in 3 legs. I don't know if this is going anywhere. Some of these technologies are interesting. Some of them are going places. Others are maybe not going places. Oscillating water columns, although not very interesting to the Scots or to the Canadians or to us here in the United States, oscillating water columns are being very are being developed in a lot of areas, including Germany, who has installed them on the cliff sides. Basically, what you're doing here is you're using water to force air up and down through a device and using that air to spin turbines, to spin generators. And that's the way these are working. And they don't have to be sited necessarily on shore. The Australians are working on a system that would essentially put them out into the ocean. You can see the idea here. And that's basically what's happening. You're forcing water, or you're forcing water to force air up and down through a system. And I'm going to skip this piece here, although I think it's a pretty cool graphic. The Japanese are using this specific technology, oscillating water columns, they call it the Mighty Whale, to not only generate electricity but have a dual-purpose use as well to create artificial harbors. So they're proposing to site these things out there to generate electricity and create artificial harbors, and you get the idea of the size. These are fairly sizable units that they're developing. The English are working on oscillating water columns as well, but in a buoy fashion. They call it the spur buoy. It's essentially got four outs and ins for the air to generate electricity. And then overtopping is the final one. Basically, this is very similar to traditional hydroelectric plants, essentially allowing overtopping and then collecting the energy as the water falls back into the ocean. And the Danes are working on a system called the Wave Dragon, you can see here. And also devices that specifically captured either, again, on shore or out into the ocean. That's the conceptual drawing, what a farm would look like. And the Norwegians as well have both standalone systems that go into the ocean and working on essentially sea cliff-type operations to collect water as it falls down through a generator, a turbine, and then a generator. So anyway, so that's the background. Here's where we get into the four bills you've got before us, and I guess a brief background on the legal framework that explains why we've proposed these bills, why we think they're necessary in some degree, and then I'll try to briefly explain why we need to fix three of them, because we drafted them fairly quickly, and we've talked to the industry since then, and I think we've reached some agreements, at least as to some of the amendments. I'm not going to go through all of the jurisdictional issues that we face in the ocean. Just keep in mind that there's all kinds of zones of authority, and the authority rests in part with the state, in part with the federal government out to 3 miles, and then beyond that it's largely with the federal government in different zones all the way out to 200 nautical miles. But I'm going to focus specifically on what we call territorial waters, 0 to 12. And the reason I'm going to focus on these specifically is because this is the area where most of these technologies are going to be sited. They're going to be sited at 2, 3, 4, 5 miles out into the ocean. They're not going beyond that because, it's cost prohibitive to be building electric cables all the way to shore. I think the estimate is about $1 million a mile right now. So you need to be out far enough so you're capturing peak waves, but you need to be out not so far that it's costing you prohibitive costs to essentially bring it into shore. Out in the territorial waters, without getting too detailed, we have basically two zones. We have this artificial line at 3 miles, and I won't bore you with all the history, although I find it fascinating. Basically, the state controls through 0 to 3 nautical miles out. The state essentially owns that part of the territorial waters called the Territorial Sea. We acquired that through the Equal Footing Doctrine and the Submerged Lands Act. It has a couple of exceptions we can talk about later, but basically, normally the state is in control of that. You have assigned Department of State Lands the authority to regulate and license uses of the seabed in that area. Beyond 3 miles, the Minerals Management Service of the Department of the Interior is the jurisdictional authority for what's called the Outer Continental Shelf, even though it's technically not really the Outer Continental Shelf. That's a whole other story, from 3 to 12. So we essentially have this 3-mile separation between who's controlling the territorial sea and who's controlling the Outer Continental Shelf. Now, just to let you know, the Department of State Lands is right now working on leasing rules for purposes of leasing parts of 0 to 3 miles for wave energy development. And they have some draft rules they've been circulating. We've submitted our comments, and they're receiving further comments. And they look really good so far. I'm very pleased with the hard work they've put into it. MMS is also working on, and they just released a programmatic environmental impact statement. This is an enormous document. I've skimmed through it all and started to read it, but it literally is about 4 inches thick. It's very heavy duty. I'm very impressed with their work, although I have some serious concerns about some of its contents, but I won't bore you with it at this point in time. So we've got DSL working on rules for 0 to 3 miles. We've got MMS working on rules for 3 to 12 miles. Not exactly consistent in terms of approach, or in terms of policy, or in terms of legal ground. However, there are some issues because I forgot to mention something. In essence, so far it sounds too good to be true, and it is, because the thing I forgot, FERC. I forgot the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission because the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is the successor to the Federal Power Commission, which was created to administer the Federal Water Power Act of 1920 and later recodified as Part 1 of the Federal Power Act, which is basically the device that Congress came up with to license dams on rivers. That's how we essentially administer that part of our federal law. Fortunately, unfortunately, depending on your perspective, FERC has asserted jurisdiction in this area. This is how we learned that FERC had asserted jurisdiction. Our friends at Finnevera, the Canadian/Irish corporation I mentioned to you that's going to be testing buoys, hopefully, off the Newport coast this summer, proposed a project, and they are pursuing this project, actually, in Macabe, which is the very tip of the Olympic Peninsula. On the Pacific Ocean in Washington, and they applied to FERC, and they essentially asked FERC, please tell us that you have no jurisdiction over these things. We don't think you have jurisdiction. Please tell us that, you know, we don't have to use the rules for siting dams on rivers for siting these things in the ocean. And they cited the legislative history, which clearly referred to, you know, the fact that Congress is looking at dams on rivers, you know, not ocean wave energy devices in the ocean, which weren't even being contemplated at that point in time. But FERC disagreed. They disagreed with Finnevera, and they issued a ruling, Aqua Energy, I give you the site there, from 2003, and they asserted jurisdiction under the Federal Power Act, interestingly enough, over the entire territorial waters. So they're asserting full jurisdiction over and above DSL, over and above MMS, and any other regulatory entity. They decided that wave energy is, in fact, a hydroelectric energy under the Federal Power Act, and that a wave energy conversion device is technically a, quote, powerhouse, unquote, under the Federal Power Act. I believe, and it's just my belief, I believe that FERC erred on all three counts. I think they ignored the very legislative history they accused Finnevera of not presenting. I believe that if FERC had looked at the legislative history and the case law, they would have reached a different conclusion if they were honest about it. But that's kind of beside the point. I believe it also flies in the face of FERC's own definitions. I just love it when you go to an agency that has made a ruling that is inconsistent with what they posted on their own website. Isn't that just interesting? I mean, they've defined, FERC has defined on their website what hydroelectricity is. Hydroelectricity begins at a dam where the power plant converts the force of falling water into electricity. We all know what hydroelectricity is, but they somehow have interpreted it to mean wave energy as well, which does not fit that definition. Interestingly enough, we know what a powerhouse is. A powerhouse is part of a dam. So Congress's use of that term, according to the legislative history, was to define essentially this piece of the dam. Unfortunately, FERC has taken that particular definitional term and applied it where it doesn't belong, which is wave energy devices in the ocean. What that has resulted in is what I call a slight flurry of activity along the Oregon coast. The Federal Power Act process is kind of akin to mining claims. You know, first in time gets its mining claim for a specific area, because, you know, we were talking about siting dams on rivers, but now we're talking about siting ocean wave energy converters in the ocean. And so we saw a flurry of applications up and down the Oregon coast for essentially square chunks of the ocean. The preliminary permits were filed with FERC, really weren't, and it's no fault of the people that were applying, they weren't vetted through any local process to see whether they were essentially utilizing appropriate areas in terms of environmental concerns, in terms of the fishing community. They were just using the process they were given under the Federal Power Act for siting dams on rivers. So I don't fault them at all. They were just using the process. As a result, Lincoln County decided to try to confront the failure of the FERC process to involve upfront planning. And we decided to confront that by applying for a preliminary permit for the entire Lincoln County coast under the Federal Power Act. Now, I know that's caused a lot of concern and dissension at FERC, and I know that, but I think we made our point in terms of raising the issue of using essentially a 1920 Act for siting dams on rivers for modern-day siting of wave energy facilities in the ocean. The struggle we have now, unfortunately, with jurisdiction is we kind of have something that's kind of unseemly in the sense that The Minerals and Management Service, which I mentioned, has general authority over the Outer Continental Shelf pursuant to federal law and most recently the Energy Policy Act of 2005. They aren't rolling over. They aren't saying, okay, FERC, you've asserted jurisdiction, we're out of here. They said, no, we don't believe you. And in fact, they are affirmatively filing protests in all the cases, the preliminary permit applications that go into the Outer Continental Shelf, saying we have jurisdiction, not FERC. And I believe they've got it right on the law. Unfortunately, what we have now is two federal agencies, the Department of Interior and Department of Energy, battling it out among and between themselves for jurisdiction over control. To me, that's a waste of resources. It's a waste of taxpayer time. I think it creates uncertainty in the industry, which is something we need to eliminate. As most of the investors in the utility business will tell you, uncertainty is what kills an industry. They need certainty for investment purposes. So this needs to be resolved. A couple of things we've done in Lincoln County, just to let you know, is we enacted a couple ordinances, one to authorize the application I already mentioned, and the other establishes something I think can and should be used as a model all up and down the Oregon coast, something we call the FINE Committee, Fishermen Involved in Natural Energy. And this is about getting the fishing industry specifically involved in the pre-planning of these facilities, because the fishing industry is concerned not only about protecting high-value fishing grounds and making sure devices don't go into the ocean that will essentially wipe out fisheries, but they're also looking at this as a golden opportunity as well. These buoys, these devices are going to need to be serviced. We have a couple of great ports. We have a great fishing fleets that can service these devices. So they're excited in terms of economic development as well. And these devices have to be built somewhere. And we got great places to build these devices. So we're excited. We are very excited about it. Let me explain briefly the purpose of these bills, and then I'll be quiet.
Rob, I have opened only the public hearing on 875, so when you address that, I'll close the public hearing. We'll open it on the next bill.
Okay.
We'll address that one. Okay.
Thank you, Senator. 875 was very adequately described by counsel. We do, however, need to make – the way it was originally drafted was 100% bonding, complete removal of these devices in case they were tested and removed and or put into place and generate electricity, but then later shut down, a company went bankrupt, whatever the scenario might be. We decided to take a different approach after talking with the industry, and the different approach was to utilize an existing regulatory framework that we have for closure of solid waste sites, frankly, because it allowed a lot broader latitude in terms of how you provide sureties. And so we have the Dash 2 amendments that provide that, but we would like to make further amendments to the Dash 2 amendments to deal with a couple of additional issues. One is R&D, so we don't stunt the growth of research and development, especially this summer, because we have at least three companies we'd like to see their buoys hit the water this summer. So we need to provide for specifically for R&D to make sure that this doesn't hamper that on a limited trial basis.
Can I stop you there and ask you what three companies do you refer to?
Sure. OPT,
right.
Ocean Power Technologies, Finnevera, which is the Macabe, the other buoy system, and then, of course, our own Oregon State University. Would like to test their direct drive buoys this summer in the ocean, both off of Reedsport and off of Newport. So we need to deal with the R&D issue, and we also need to deal with what we mean by removal, because we may actually not mean complete removal. If we're talking about concrete anchors, for example, that are sunk below the seabed, we may not need those to be removed. So we need to go in and define what removal means, and we need to define what we mean by research and development. And I would use another bill's language to do that, but I'm not going to talk about that bill yet because this is only on 875. So I guess my short story on Senate Bill 875, we think it's a good bill with the Dash 2 amendments, with further additional amendments we have yet to work out. And then I guess I'll be quiet about the rest.
All right. Are there any questions of Rob on Senate Bill 875? All right. Representative Cowan.
Just one. You said you still need to address two issues, and you said one is R&D.
The other is removal. What a definition
sorry,
of removal
I didn't quite
would
catch
be.
That. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Quite simply, we're worried that if one of these big anchors will bury up in the sand, in the ocean, a weight like a crab pot will work itself down into the sand. If it goes completely under the surface and doesn't impact the environment, it wouldn't be a bad thing to leave it under the sand rather than dig it all up to remove it. So It's a natural characteristic along the shallow waters of the coast to have that action happen. Now, as you get deeper, there's less of that action. That's some of the experimentation we'll learn when we get these experimental sites in the ocean.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You said that you all applied at Lincoln County, which I think was pretty wise for the entire coast of the county. Does that mean you have sole control over the entire coast? And then do you rent, lease, sell the rights? How does all that work? And then where they didn't do that, so anybody that has investment money can go and apply, and then the county adjacent to that part of the coast just has to let them do it? Is that how that works? There's a lot there. Robert,
yeah.
If you need that.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think you basically have the gist of it. I would finesse a lot of the language you used, but we applied for the whole Oregon coast knowing that FERC would not grant us that. Essentially, we were applying to it so we could become essentially a supersiding authority. We had a good motives in the sense that we established the fine committee, and we fully intend to create essentially what are wave-ready parks, places where we think you'll get good wave action that aren't going to harm the fishing industry. We're still going to do that irregardless if they dismiss us out, because we want to define where the good places are and the bad places are in terms of harm and mitigation of damages. So we're going to do that anyways. But yeah, I mean, we have a 1920 system that's designed for siting dams on rivers, which is first come, first serve, with a special priority preference from municipalities. So we claim the municipality preference, but there's no way they're going to grant us the whole coast. We recognize that. They've essentially told us that. They've given us to May 1st to define a little box in the ocean. But that's what it is, defining a little box in the ocean. OPT, for example, came in and defined a box just off the South Beach, and just off of Newport, a fairly sizable square box. And it's a wonderful box, but it really doesn't have any relationship to consultations with other important users of the ocean to figure out whether this would cause harm. No casting of aspersions or blame on OPT. They were just following the process they were given by FERC. But you are right. It's essentially like a mining claim.
The OPT process is now an Oregon Solutions process. And so everybody is at the table, but not fine, because that's relatively new. And Oregon Solutions people didn't even know it existed until Commissioner Thompson told me about it. Representative Schaffer, follow-up?
Just a follow-up. Mr. Bavette, you're not the first one that tells me I need to finesse my language.
Yes, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Rob, you keep saying we, us. I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative, I'm probably talking in the more generic sense of all of the folks that are working proactively to get wave energy developed. We have a Lincoln County wave energy team that involves fishermen and scientists and folks, many of the folks in the back of the room here from state agencies and local agencies. There's also a statewide wave energy team. And so there are essentially teams of folks that are trying to be proactive about making sure this technology gets developed rapidly and we don't get left behind from the Scots and the Portuguese. But we also engage in this technology in a methodical, thoughtful way that doesn't cause needless harm. So when I use we, I'm pretty much talking about everyone in the room here, because we all been working together for a while.
Follow up. All right. Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you very much. And this is so exciting, and I don't understand any of it. But it sounds fun and a great movie, I think. But who are you paid by? I mean, is this consortium pay you? Did you say you're an attorney?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm actually a lawyer with Lincoln County. So this is my boss here.
I see.
And my normal job really isn't doing a lot of this. But then again, my normal job isn't doing a lot of the stuff I come before your committees on. So this is a special project that many of us have taken on. Many of us have donated a lot of our own personal time because we believe in the mission of making this happen.
Let me answer that. Can I like answer that a little bit? We realize that Rob has unbelievable skills, and the longer he's worked for us, we realize the skills are far vaster than we ever imagined. And so literally, he works for us, and he does his job with Lincoln County, but we've let him go out and take on things like methamphetamine, wave-action generators, to do the research so that we can do what's good for the state, and as a result, it's good for Lincoln County.
Madam Chair. The final question, please.
Final question.
Sorry.
Okay.
Representative Cowan. I'm just curious, is this all public or private? I mean, is there private enterprise involved in any of this, or the state owns the land, or Lincoln County and the water and the state? So who? I don't know how you decide who gets this potential and ultimately the final energy.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, that's an excellent question. Most of the screens I showed you in the first segment, those are mostly all private corporations, traditional and alternative energy companies that are looking in expanding their portfolios and getting involved in renewable energy that's baseload energy. There is profit motive with many of them. They see some potential to develop renewable energy and earn profit as well. There's also many public players. The key public player in our county is Central Lincoln PUD, actually the key player in about 3.5 counties, because they're the ones that essentially own that piece of the grid along the coast that these things would hook into. So they're looking at it as a really a great source of renewable energy to satisfy the domestic needs and actually become a purveyor of electricity at some point in time. So there's a lot of motivations that are driving this, ranging the gamut. But the beautiful thing so far is everybody sees the real value in pursuing this technology.
I think Representative Nelson, though, has hit upon something that is questioning in a lot of minds, and that is who really is going to have the say about who's going to be able to have wave energy and how much wave energy are we going to have and what is the research going to tell us. So I think that what Oregon doesn't want, or many people in this building don't want, is a feeding frenzy. And so I think that the question was extremely on point.
And Madam Chair, I would agree, and I will tell you to FERC's credit, and I will talk about I'll reserve it because a couple of our bills touch on exactly that issue, a couple of the later bills. But I will give credit to FERC. They have announced and applied an interim rule, a strict scrutiny rule, so the feeding frenzy, so to speak, is calmed at least to a certain degree for the time being while we figure out a lot of this stuff.
All right, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 875 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2844. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2844 permits coastal counties to apply for a designation of wave energy enterprise zones for development of wave energy facilities. It provides for temporary property tax exemptions of certain property used in a designated zone to harness wave energy. It would be effective on the 91st day following sine die. And I will point out that this particular measure does have a subsequent referral to revenue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I'll have the two of you proceed.
Madam Chair, again, thank you very much. House Bill 2844 stems from a basic tax structure issue that we're facing. Right now, as you know, we tax personal property, a business personal property in the state of Oregon. We tax it on a county-by-county basis. Utilities are what we call centrally assessed. So a Department of Revenue values the entire utility and allocates that portion within Oregon to Oregon, and then sub-allocates to within counties. Well, it turns out the county boundaries also extend out to the 3 nautical mile limit. So if we have a buoy that's out at 2.9 miles, it will be treated as personal property subject to taxation. If it's at 3.1 miles, it's not subject to taxation. So we came up with House Bill 2844 as a means of equalizing the playing field. We don't want people making siting decisions based on tax issues. We want them making siting decisions based on environmental issues, on fisheries issues, on things that are important to Oregon and the users of the Oregon's ocean. So this would provide a mechanism to allow counties to essentially abate those taxes through an economic enterprise zone to encourage this development. And that's the genesis of 2844. I will tell you, we also need a couple of amendments to this one as well. We've the Special District Association and we don't have a problem with this, would like us to limit the number of these things, and we propose to limit it to 6, so essentially a maximum of 1 per county, so we don't people get nervous about economic enterprise zones because it does abate taxes to some degree. So that's the purpose of 2844, to level the playing field so people aren't making decisions based on siting on things involving taxation.
All right, questions of Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rob, Commissioner, thank you so much. When we're talking about this, wouldn't we as a state want to encourage as many facilities to be located within the 3 miles simply because eventually they would be on the property tax rolls?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, but I didn't really want to say that.
The reason I'm asking, sorry, follow-up question again. The reason I ask that is because it seems like your last comment about limiting the number to 6, it seems like to me we'd want to expand that as much as we could to try to encourage those folks to be inside that area. That's all I was going to. Can I do one more quick follow-up?
Sure.
In your earlier testimony, and I didn't get to ask the question, you talked about wave energy being a base load. And Terry, maybe this is better a question for you. When you're looking at all the conflicts out there, how big of an industry can this be as far as taking load off of our main grid? I mean, how much of a base load can it be percentage-wise? And these farms, based on some of the pictures, look like they could be fairly large. They could take up large chunks of the ocean without too much conflict. What are we talking about here as far as percentage of our energy use?
Well, you got a number right off the top of your head. They could conceivably take up quite an extensive area, probably. If you were to look out and they were successful and generated enough money, you could see all of the area out to 12 miles. I mean, it depends strictly on money. I mean, if you're making money, you can expand. Now, there is a problem with conflict with the fishing industry because you have renewable food resources, and does renewable power usurp renewable food? That's the question that has to be dealt with in the future.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Well, that leads to the question of the optimum number, and you're working on that, right?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, we're working on that. I think we'll know a whole lot more once we get through the research and development phase to find out how we can best array these buoys to generate electricity. So, I mean, the range is quite phenomenal in terms of what it could potentially produce, upwards of 2,000 megawatts. So we have a huge potential capacity, but that would pose a lot of conflicts. And scientists estimate that if we just merely tapped into 0.2% of ocean wave energy, we could power the world, because we're talking about a much more dense form of energy that can be extracted with a smaller device. But I think we have a whole lot more research and development to do. I think that the answers to both senators' questions, hopefully we may get some better answers to those questions about a year from now after we've done more testing. But I think we'll be able to answer it more specifically as we get further into the process of not only testing but also coordination with other important users such as the Fine Committee and the fishing industry.
One of the other big advantages, and I don't pretend to be an expert on electricity, but as it is now, there's really very little generation west of the Cascades. If we were able to generate power from the ocean, you have a dissipation of power the farther you get from the source, and having a new place in there would be a big advantage to power companies. Supposed to be a big advantage to coastal people if they had a renewable power supply that was consistent, that was right there close to them.
So, if I can make one last comment, this bill is actually ready to move unless you want to limit its number to 6, one per county. I don't have any substantive proposals or changes to make to this bill other than if we want to limit the number of them. And I don't have an objection to limiting the number if that's what you see fit.
I have one more name that would like to testify, and if you will just stay there, we'll ask Art to come up. And Art, you may, I don't know if there's a chair there. If not, pull one up. There is one. Okay. All right.
First of all,
welcome. If you will give us your full name for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Berger. My name is Arthur Fish, Business Incentives Coordinator with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. I came here today, I listened to the last hearing, and we had some thoughts at the department about, you know, the wave energy enterprise zone, and wanted to make sure you were aware of some of the other, where this comes from in the tax code and some of the things that are already there in the tax code, and maybe some ideas for utilizing or just making small changes to existing programs to make sure that you accomplish the same thing without, you know, additional stuff in the law that, you know, is getting a little bit redundant, so to speak. So with that, just let me give you some background. The Wave Energy Enterprise Zone basically proposes the same exemption on new property that you find in an enterprise zone. Okay, the 3 to 5 year exemption from property taxes on the new property if a firm is authorized and increases employment by 10% and those sorts of things. And they basically piggybacks off the enterprise zone statutes. Okay, then you have, and this was already done in effect for rural renewable energy development zones, which is basically the subject of this packet. A rural renewable energy development zone, there are some distinct differences between, you know, what a wave energy enterprise zone would be and a rural renewable energy development zone is. We have 5 of them across the state, and basically any of these coastal counties could essentially make themselves or seek designation for themselves as a whole, just like they could with a wave energy enterprise zone, or at least the whole coast in the case of a wave energy enterprise zone. And potentially that would do essentially what this bill would do for you today if they wanted to. Now, there is some issue about whether wave energy is a, quote, renewable energy resource. It's not entirely clear, but it could be clarified. And that's basically the point of some of the amendments I've provided that could be made to some bills that are already passing through both houses right now, including referrals to revenue committees. So that's kind of the basic idea, is just to give you a notion of if you want to pursue this type of tax abatement or incentive, you may find it a little easier, or, you know, at least easier for us to administer by just tweaking some of these other legislations or existing programs, if that makes any sense.
Have you seen these amendments, Rob?
Madam Chair, I've seen the other pieces of legislation, and I'm the one that drafted up 2844. I looked at the other statutes that Mr. Fish is referring to, and I found them unsatisfactory in many technical details, and found it simpler, just as a matter of kind of legislative council work, to create a scheme that specifically addressed wave energy, because there's so many things within the other regulatory frameworks that he's talking about that I would have to tweak, and I didn't want to upset those apple carts. Furthermore, I didn't want to be limited to the number of zones that are left that have been allocated for those other purposes. If we just essentially add wave energy to the list of things in other zones, those zones may already be used up. And so I decided to essentially cut and paste those other schemes, modify them to make them fit wave energy, and have them as a standalone, because this is a new technology and we have a new need for zones for that purpose. So that's my explanation, but I'm happy to go with whatever way the committee wants to go.
All right. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, sir, I couldn't agree more with trying to achieve simplicity. We need a whole lot more of that in this building. My question is to you, sir, someone out there, and this discussion we're having in this building over what is renewable and what isn't and what's going to be considered renewable under a specific bill, and they'd say, well, we're not including hydro as renewable. It's an absurd conversation. It's ridiculous. Did I hear you right, though? Someone is questioning whether or not wave energy is renewable. Did I hear you correctly?
I think I'm coming from the same point you are, Co-Chair Verger, Representative Shoffler, members of the committee. I first of all believe that wave energy would fall under those statutes. I mean, it seems as renewable as anything. The problem arises because of, you know, what you've heard today about, you know, FERC sort of declaring hydroelectricity, and so if you look at the renewable energy statutes, it sort of divides out conventional hydroelectricity from other renewable energy, but it also says water power and so forth. So, I mean, we have essentially, and again, I think Mr. Bovet is referring to the limited number of enterprise zones that we have. But as far as rural renewable energy development zones, which are countywide, including out to the 3 miles, there's no limit on those. Okay, and I would think if we have something called a rural renewable energy development zone, I would like to be able to say to people that that covers wave energy too. I mean, I think it does, possibly anyway. But, you know, it's a matter of clarification. And I think if we have this program out there and we're talking to companies, it would be better if we just had the one program, if it basically does the same thing, that is the same thing, instead of having two programs that are basically the same. if you know what I mean. That's the sort of simplicity we're after, I guess, is to put it, is that we want to have just one sort of program, make sure that, you know, if we can define make sure that renewable energy does cover everything that, you know, we think it does, you know, that everyone, most people think it does, that it does.
Other questions? Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you very much. I just have a concern. If you took the RREDs, Mr. Fish, could you cover the entire coast? Because Rob previously stated, I don't know if you were here yet, that we only were able to get the Lincoln County coast. Is that correct? So, but would your RREDs allow us to have the rest of the Oregon coast?
Representative Nelson, Co-Chair Verger, members of the committee, I mean, I think, in due respect to Mr. Bovet, I think he was thinking if they created these WE zones, or wave energy enterprise zones, that, you know, each of the six counties could, you know, whether you had six or five or whatever, if they could do the whole, they could do the whole coast with one of those zones anyway. But indeed, with a red zone, the way it's set up now, it would cover the entire county and the coast and the 3 mile territorial sea. And it would cover, I would think, wave energy, but also wind energy, geothermal, you know, and all the other, quote, renewable energy out there, solar and so forth, in that jurisdiction. Now, part of our amendment would adhere to what is proposed with the WE zones, which is that you don't have to make it the whole coast. So that if a county wanted to just exclude some parts, it could exclude some parts for, you know, just because it didn't want to see the buoys out in that pair, or at least not give them an incentive out there. Again, the tax incentive is a little different from all these other regulatory issues. I mean, what you can and can't do is one thing. What you might get a tax abatement for or not is another. Does that make sense?
Anyone want to respond?
Madam Chair, my only purpose in drafting a new statutory regime is I found so many pieces of the renewable energy zones to be, I would have to not withstand so many little technical things because we're talking about things in the ocean, not things on land, and a bunch of other details. I guess I disagree respectfully with Mr. Fish that wave energy is covered under the existing scheme because of the way they define hydroelectricity and water power. So I'm not convinced at all that we could even use the existing scheme. Plus, it's a clunky fit. And when I draft things, I like to draft things really simple and straightforward. That's just the way I like to write.
Right.
But again, I'm happy to spend a lot of time going through and making wave energy fit into the existing scheme if that's what the committee would like.
Well, I think the suggestion is whether you want to concentrate on just the 3 miles or whether do you accept the premise that it covers the county, therefore it covers out into the territorial sea. So I think that's a discussion that just should be made and should be thought through. Any other questions on this particular bill? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, and I apologize for coming in late. It also begs the question, and you may have discussed this, is this just a Lincoln County, or are we even considering an application of the same standard along the entire coast?
Madam Chair, as Mr. Fish mentioned, it would be county by county could select to have one or not. So it could be the entire coast if all six counties, Senator, decided to do this.
Let me nuance my question. And has there been any discussion, and perhaps this is best suited to the commissioner, has there been any discussion amongst the counties whether or not this would be desirable or not? What I'm trying to do is to avoid a patchwork of methodologies, a patchwork of incentives, a patchwork of regulatory applications. I'm just trying to figure out how to make it the easiest for companies to decide that they want a site in Oregon and under what terms and conditions.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we essentially do want the ability to have a patchwork for the purposes of abating and equalizing taxes across this 3 mile nautical line, as well as incentivizing the placement of these devices in areas that will minimize or mitigate damage. So there's a kind of a dual purpose in why we crafted it this way. But we're not in any way wedded to this methodology. I just wanted to understand why we propose what we propose.
One more comment, Madam Chair. I understand the exclusionary desire because there may be some places that are just too special or too unique or too much impact on the fishing community. I can clearly understand why you'd want to have exclusions. But what I'm trying to avoid is a built-in incentive that would have Clatsop competing with Lincoln, competing with Coos.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I think there may be some of that occurring irrespective of this bill. I don't think the personal property taxation is going to drive that. The investors and the companies are going to go to where they get good wave energy that's close to a grid hookup for economic reasons. That's going to be the drivers and where they're welcome. So I think it may be that local governments, local communities are going to be seeking out this, which I think is the nature of economic development zones to begin with, where communities can decide, well, we're going to abate taxes for a while because we want this to happen here.
Madam Chair, one last comment.
All right.
I guess what informs my opinion about this is that I watched with horror when a steel company came to this state and pitted one little community against another to see who could cough up more incentives, when I don't believe they ever had a desire to come here at all. And I think it was shameful the way that we fell all over ourselves trying to see who could offer up the most to a company that may or may not have been a good corporate neighbor in this state. And that's what I'm trying to avoid.
I think there may be an advantage to the creation of the one per county, in that if the early companies want to get in and take advantage of that, they could. They'd have to move on the action to move forward with their project. And actually, it's not quite the same as when you're along the coast. There's only so many harbors that it's going to be capably worked out of, and there's only the six counties. So it won't be quite the pitting once against the other like it was in the steel company example.
All right. Mr. Fish?
Thank you, Co-Chair Berger, Senator Johnson, members of the committee. Yeah, I remember the senator's question from hearing the testimony from last time, and I really don't see that. I guess I agree with people here. I don't see that happening as a course. I mean, we have enterprise zones, and, you know, I mean, areas, we'll look at areas, but generally speaking, if they have an enterprise zone, they have an enterprise zone, it's great. If they don't, you know, that may work against them, but there's not much communities can do to just flip over on the spur of the moment. For wind energy, we have some of the smaller projects that are currently using some of these red zones, and you know, in some other programs, but the counties and stuff are working with them very well. I guess with respect to the wave energy enterprise zone, the red zone, I mean, if we're out there explaining this to companies, we're kind of left juggling. I mean, in practice, it's the same thing. And we're just sort of saying, well, you know, if you're a red zone, maybe you can use wave energy here, wind energy, or you could create a wee zone. And it creates this potential of redundancy right now, which I would think is going to be more confusing than it's not, because if you read through the statutes, may look a little different here and there, but essentially it gets you at the same point as things stand now between a red zone and a wee zone, give or take some of these issues of minor clarification with the territorial sea, or is wave energy a renewable energy or whatever.
All right, final question. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm listening to this conversation and looking at the existing statute and the proposed statute. I have to say that I have not been a proponent of enterprise zones from the day we first started talking about them, and that was because I was concerned about the property tax impacts on all of the special taxing districts in the whole scope of property taxes. But I really want to see this opportunity move forward, and it seems to me that the clarity that this proposed legislation, 2844, offers would make it much more clear. I've looked through the existing statute, and it seems to me that there's a very clear distinction between a renewable energy development zone that's aimed at wind, which is by nature pretty much on dry land, the kinds of technology that's out there and wave energy, which is in a different place. I would encourage us, though, to move forward with the recommended amendments that would create six and allow that opportunity of one per county so that the counties that are looking at wave energy, which by nature where they are is along the ocean, would have that opportunity of using this as one tool, and I just think it would be cleaner to keep it in two separate statutes. So, I'm sorry, that's not a question.
That's all right. That's all right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2844, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2925. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2925, in fact, exempts wave energy projects from specific provisions of the hydroelectric projects statute. It would declare an emergency effective upon passage. And I will note that we have received a no fiscal impact already on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Rob?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is designed to enable us to do some testing, to do some R&D, put some buoys in the water this summer, hopefully. Without getting into the full FERC regulatory framework, please know that FERC has a case they decided a couple of years ago that basically says that non-commercial projects don't need a FERC license. So you can, as long as you're not hooking into the grid and displacing energy and selling energy, then you don't need a FERC license. So then we default down to the WPC process. We would like to be able to test buoys without essentially going through the licensing process for a commercial facility. This is a necessary bill that we get passed, so essentially Dr. Van Jawan and her colleagues can go test these things so we can get some data about what they do. We would love to have this bill moved today if at all possible.
That's where you have the very small number of buoys for research and development. Okay, any questions on this bill? All right, no questions at all on this bill? Has everybody had a good look at it? All right, I'm going to call Dwight French.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dwight French. I work at the Water Resources Department, where I am the administrator of the Water Rights and Adjudication Section. Part of my responsibilities includes supervising the hydroelectric section. And thank you for the opportunity to present some testimony. Just take a couple minutes of your time. The Water Resource Department supports this bill. Generally, the Water Resources Department is the lead permitting authority over hydroelectric projects in the state, including wave energy projects. In this role, the department coordinates resource issues with other state agencies. And as you might know, the Water Resources Department focuses on issues of water supply. Words and issues like water availability or injury to existing water rights are words and issues that we work on a lot. These issues are not really associated with wave energy, and that's why we're able to support this bill and not have to spend a lot of time over the next couple of years reviewing and becoming coming up to speed and becoming experts on wave energy when it doesn't really raise issues that are normal to what we do at the Water Resources Department. So we support the bill, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you very much for being here, and I appreciate your testimony. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2925, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2925. I would appreciate a motion. Representative Nelson?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2925, and there's no amendments to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nelson moves House Bill 2925 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll have you call the roll.
Senator Georgell? Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler? Power?
Aye.
Senator George G. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
And Commissioner Moody is excused, and Chair Berger?
Aye. House Bill 2925 passes. I'll ask Representative Cowan if she'd like to carry the bill. All right, the last one is HJM 22. I'll open a public hearing on the bill, HJM 22.
Madam Chair, thank you again. The idea here is pretty simple. It's to ask Congress. Originally, the idea was to ask Congress to fix the Federal Power Act, to tell us. I know, and your laughter actually is cause for why we need amendments to this bill.
We need an amendment.
Of course, I already described how FERC and MMS are both claiming jurisdiction over the same thing, which is unseemly. It's wasteful of taxpayers' money. It's wasteful of everybody's time. It creates uncertainty in the field, and uncertainty can be death to utilities. So the way we originally drafted HJM 22, and I presented it to you in Tillamook, was to essentially say Congress fix this issue without specifying what we wanted them to fix. And I unfortunately used the words reopen the Federal Power Act. And wow, did people come off the ceiling on that one. And so I proposed to gut and stuff the actual specifics, because I spoke with many of the industry representatives both yesterday at Congresswoman Hooley's forum and in other settings to essentially be surgical about it. Tell Congress we want them to say X. And I actually started, unfortunately I didn't have a whole lot of time, I came up with X. And this is just a theoretical X. But I really don't have a problem with FERC. Don't know if I have a problem with MMS or not, but it certainly would be nice to get Congress to not wait for litigation to arise to decide who's control and what. We might as well just choose it and choose it now. And so here's just some I literally drafted it out in the hallway, so it's not perfect, I'm sure. But this would be the guts of it. So we ask Congress to specifically grant FERC jurisdiction over wave energy conversion devices located in the territorial waters from 0 to 12, that we ask them to adopt separate rules specific to ocean wave energy conversion devices, which I think they're intending to do anyways because the rules for dams, well, they don't work. And specifically telling them, let's do this on an expedited processing basis, and let's make sure we have state and local government involvement on the get-go and not treat the ocean like a mining claim scene. And so that's the purpose of this kind of proposed conceptual amendment. I'm happy to work with the industry on tweaking this. That what they really wanted me to do was to get specific and not have this generic reopen the Federal Power Act, which made everybody nervous. So I agree with that. I think we still ought to move House Joint Memorial 22. It's unseemly to have two federal agencies fighting over control and to create uncertainty in this environment. So I think Congress ought to do it and not wait for lawyers like me to litigate it out in court.
My understanding is, however, you're going to smooth out your language and so forth for HJM 22?
Yes.
All right. Any questions on HJM 22?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just want to, Rob, to note how many co-sponsors you have on this bill. So watch out.
Representative, we'll try to get this one tuned up.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 22. Committee, we need to suspend the rules to allow Representative Schaffler to vote on 2925. Do I hear any objections?
Let's talk about it.
Hearing one half of one. All right. So be it. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote?
Aye. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Schaffler votes aye. All right. Committee, we have one more piece of business, so I will thank both of you for coming, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon, I'm sure. We have one more piece of business. We would like to have a committee bill regarding ocean troll salmon fisheries. And we'd like to introduce it as a committee bill, but in order to get that bill put together, we need to write a letter to the speaker. And so I will entertain a motion, Senator Johnson. Oh, I've got to open a work session
to take action.
I'm going to listen to my administrative assistant here. She says I've got to open a work session. I'm going to recognize Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Recognizing that we have a certain protocol at this stage in the session to go through to allow committee bills to proceed, I would move that this committee send a letter respectfully asking the Speaker to allow legislation to be drafted on the subject of ocean troll salmon fisheries.
Thank you. Senator Johnson moves that a letter be drafted to Speaker Merkley requesting the language be drafted regarding ocean troll salmon fisheries for the purpose of introduction as a committee bill. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, do we need to go to both presiding officers? Because I would amend my motion to have it go to both presiding officers.
They only told me, Speaker Merkley.
Then may I make my motion vague enough to say that the appropriate presiding officer, and that way if there's any
discussion later on. All right, thank you very much for that change. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I don't have a real up-to-date report on Representative Boone. However, she was to see the doctor today, and I look forward to hearing what she had to say. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope that is good news from our colleague. I do want to express some frustration. We spent a lot of time working on an extension of the 911 tax in this committee, and we put a sunset on that. Now, currently, there's talk of another bill coming out of the House Revenue Bill Committee without a sunset on that tax, and that rather frustrates me. I think this committee has every reason to be very upset over that. We passed it out. We'll come back and look at it 2014. There is no reason to have a competing, dueling bill without a sunset after this, in my humble opinion, after this committee worked that bill. So I just wanted to share that with you, and thank you for indulging me.
You bet. Thank you for sharing that. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, just by way of announcements, and I think work is being done to try to ameliorate the level of conflict, but there are going to be certain nights coming up when the Ways and Means Committee is on the road. And I think you're also on Ways and Means, as am I. I think those of us that will be required to be at those meetings will do the best we can to coordinate our absences. But I just wanted to make sure that anybody that was listening to the proceedings of this committee knew that some of us might be absent and why.
I appreciate that very much. That's true, and there's quite a busy schedule for the Ways and Means Committees on their travel. So if there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.